Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're gonna disclose some stuff.
yes we are. We've not the weirdest part is that I've before, well, we're gonna get into other things, but the big thing is that there hasn't, like, since we've started recording, there hasn't been a like there's been Spielberg releases, but there's not been a Spielberg release, right?
Yeah, like it's been like the, it's weird to say Spielberg small passion projects,
but it has
it. Yeah, like the Fablemans, which I still haven't seen.
Oh,
the West Side Story again. Yes. Still have not seen it. And that's it.
Yeah, that's it for COVID, because West Side Story was filmed in the middle of COVID. Like it was starting and then COVID happened and then he had to stop. And then they started again towards the end of, like, you know, the end of all of the shut-in stuff. And, like, you know, we were still making precautions and stuff. I would implore you to see West Side Story. Like, it's probably the best. It's probably the best thing he's directed since Tintin. Like,
go ahead. I want to get to it. I was having this discussion with Steph. Like,
yeah,
we decided that we're gonna do tonight and tomorrow. We're basically just not doing anything. We're just hanging out at the house. Ah. And so I was like, well, let's pick a couple of movies to watch. And do you want to stick with a theme like Spielberg? I have plenty of Spielberg movies, and ones that I've seen, obviously ones that I haven't seen. And she's like, sure. So we're going to rewatch War of the Worlds, which I haven't seen, I don't think, since it probably came out on Blu-ray. I know I saw it in the theater because I saw it with my dad. I think I watched it when it first came out on Blu-ray. Have not seen it since.
Oh, that one plays so. We will get into like something.
Yeah,
but that one plays so much better than it did even 10 years ago because of the Tom Cruise of it all. It plays so much. Like, the ending still sucks. Like, there's no way that Robbie would ever escape. Like, the whole thing about the teenage. Yeah. I need to see this. I know now why he did that. It was the whole post 9/11 bullshit and, like, you know, son's going off to war and father's not being able to do anything. But, and again, we'll talk about this a little bit more with Spielberg, at least for me. Like, it's the whole thing of, like, playing, like, making subtext super text that I hate. Like, I cannot stand that about him sometimes. Like, he gets this itch to do something like, let's make it obvious. I need to make it obvious. I need to make it obvious. And but anyways, I'm very excited for you to see. And what was the other ones that you were thinking about?
The other one we're definitely watching is AI, because I've never seen AI.
So. Yeah. Okay. Oh, man. That one is, I will say, of all of the Spielberg stuff, for me, along with BFG, it feels like the oddest movie. Now, BFG is very Spielberg.
BFG.
Fucking BFG, man. A big fucking giant. Even though it's a big friendly giant. That's the kookiest movie. But, like, AI is the oddest movie because it doesn't make sense other than it's a...
Well, it's Kubrick's movie, right?
Yeah. It's Spielberg doing Kubrick, which... is a very weird thing, but, like, with it all removed, I'd be very curious. I'd be very curious to see what you have to say about it, because it's literally 25 years. Like, it's wild that it's been 25 years since AI.
Yeah.
And plus, the title, But anyways,
BFG I haven't seen either. So, but it also did not seem like my kind of thing. So.
And it's weird too because it's his trilogy of Mark Rylance movies. Like he fell in love with Mark Rylance.
Yeah.
Like Bridge of Spies is actually a really great film.
I'd like to revisit that, but I watched it on when it hit. I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it when it hit video.
VOD. Yeah.
I was bored out of my mind.
Okay. I saw it in the theater, and maybe that's what made the difference for me because I was trapped in. It was good. It was very Oscar baity. It felt like you know what it felt like? It felt like a better, for me, it felt like a better version of, what's that one that, Tinker Toiler Soldier Spy, a film that
another,
I keep on.
Another movie that I watched and was like,
yeah,
I love these actors. I'm cannot. So fucking bored.
Yeah.
I'm so bored.
Me and it was what, like, that movie caused me and, me and, what's his name? Jesus, I can't even think of his
Scott.
Name. Scott. Into an argument, because he got so pissed off at me. Well, you just don't know great movies then, do you? And I'm like, I guess if, like, movies are Prozac. If movies are meant to be Prozac with great British actors speaking in hushed tones where nothing happens.
That's actually a good segue into a movie I watched this week.
Oh, okay.
That came out earlier this year,
uh-huh.
Which I don't know. I don't know if you've even mentioned it, so you may have seen it.
Uh-huh.
So we sat down and watched Crime 101. Earlier this week.
I tried to.
Dude, talk about fucking boring.
Like, yeah.
How do you make boring heat?
I don't, like, that was my whole entire thing, was I watched the first 30 minutes of this, and I thought that I had gotten an hour in, and I looked at my watch, and I'm like, fuck this, I have better things to do.
It's 2.5 hours long.
Yes. 2.5 hours long, bro. And like, my favorite thing is that Crime 101 doesn't, it isn't, like, Crime 101 doesn't mean that it's, like, teaching people how to be criminals.
Right,
it's the freeway. It's
the one. Yeah.
Yes. I'm so. Like, oh, God. I'm like, and then I thought, I was like, oh, well, you know what, maybe it'll be more of an insider thing. And I'll tell you, as a person that has lived in, like, Los Angeles all my life, like, this was not a movie that was, like, I'm like, it was nice to see things shot on location, but it was so boring that I turned it off. I was like, I've got better things to do. I don't have another 2 hours. Like,
yeah.
How do you make boring heat? Like, obviously it didn't get better if you're calling it boring heat.
No, uh-huh. There are some spectacular chase scenes in the movie,
uh-huh.
But like, so I was actually having this conversation with Spencer and Katie. We went and saw Disclosure Day with them,
yeah,
last night, and I was talking. Katie was talking about, like, she likes it when a movie's like action and 90 minutes, and I was like, don't watch Crime 101. I was like, if you do, just like fast forward every time somebody stops and like takes a breath. Just fast forward, because it's like 5 minutes of your life you're not going to get back.
Yeah.
Because it's just lingering stuff. I said, but the flip side of that is, like, if that's what you want, go watch a movie called In the Gray, like, which is,
yes,
streaming right now. And I know we already talked about that. I won't rehash that. We both enjoyed that movie, even though it is preposterous and, like, but it's just fun.
Yeah.
And, I compared to Crime 101, it's like, dude, you could lose an hour of this movie and it would cook. Like, it would just be, you have the performances. Like, I don't know what Halle Berry's doing there.
Oh,
like,
my God.
There's this whole thing in the movie at one, uh-huh, point where the agency that she works for, like, the guy is trying to demean her by saying, like, she doesn't bring in the clients anymore because she's 53 and nobody wants 53, which I get, like, that misogynistic, ageist, like, bullshit against women, and using, like, this little bit of a platform you have to say stuff like that. Here's the problem.
It's Halle Berry. It's
Halle fucking Berry. Like, who at 53 looks better than, like, every person I know.
Yeah. Like, literally, like Halle Berry. That's fucking Halle Berry. Like, literally, like, is playing up against fucking, like, Chris Hemsworth, who is 40 and is, like, a justifiable lead of, like, sexiness against him. Like, how do you say, like, I would
like, she's woefully miscast only because she's underused. Like, she doesn't get much to do. Mark Ruffalo is really fun in it, but, like, he also is, he's on to the scheme. But, like, his department, nobody, but, like, they're like, nah, that's not related. And, like, you're just, you know, seeing shit where there is none. And, like, trying to play it up like he's an idiot, but it doesn't really work. Hemsworth is played, like, he's trying to play brooding, which he's okay at. Like, we've seen him do it with Thor. But, yeah. Like, so much of this movie is him brooding that it just becomes, like, I don't want to see this, man. Like, Chris Hemsworth is really, really fun when he's being...
funny. And charming. Yeah,
and charming. And, like, it's okay to have those little moments, but so much of the movie is him just brooding about shit that, like, you know... It does look good. It looks incredible. It's just too fucking long and just boring as shit for the most part. So, don't watch Crime 101 unless, like, you want to take a nap.
That's what happened. Like, I ended up falling asleep. That's what ended up happening. Like, so, yeah. So, like, I just don't understand how you have that cast, you have that concept, and you have all that time. You have 2.5, like, because I literally look, I was like, 2.5 hours. Damn, I guess this is gonna be like a crime-esque, like, there's gonna be like a heat-esque crime saga, and it just wasn't. Like, and you know what it was, like, you know what gave me the indication, like, you know what started to really kind of doze me off was the Ruffalo of it all. As soon as I saw Ruffalo come in, I'm like, this is his character from Now You See Me. Like, yeah, the first one, the FBI.
It is a little like that. And it kind of does fall into, like, some of that ridiculous territory at the end where it's like, he's not in on the entire thing.
Yeah.
But, like, he does kind of, like, spoilers for the movie. He does kind of fall into the, like, oh yeah, like, these fucking rich people think they could just do whatever they want. Fuck them. We're just going to steal from them. So it does get a little into that territory. Although, like, Now You See Me passes the point of, like, when it's like, oh, so everybody's in on this? Like, that's when that movie loses me. I'm like, but that means you just negate everything you did at the beginning of the movie. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, Crime 101's boring. I did also see Power Ballad after we recorded last week. And did you see it?
No, I did not. I told you, like, I think we talked about it off air. I was not, like, the guy who directed it, like, John Carney, I liked once, and I haven't liked anything since.
Yeah. It's
Does a song change the world?
Yeah, no, I mean, not change the world. It changes the world of these two guys, and
it
is very sweet, bittersweet, but sweet. Paul Rudd is fucking excellent in it, and the Jonas kid is really, really good too. The cast overall is really phenomenal. It's not as funny as you want it to be. It's kind of sad for the most part.
You were the one that really liked Sing Street, right? Like you
I haven't seen Sing Street.
Spencer. Yeah, no, I think it's Spencer. Like I never got the love for that movie. I was like, it's just high school commitments. I love commitments. And the ending just wild me out. Like it kind of freaked me out, that movie. I'd be curious about your thoughts on Sing Street. John Carney is a guy that he made once, which is like a perfect film. Like that movie is perfect. I revisited it like a year ago or two, and like I still cried. Like at every spot that I cried at, like when I first saw it in the theaters. And then he's just not made anything that I kind of like. Like I kind of liked the speaking of the Ruffalo movie, where again somebody steals a song, like Adam Levine steals a song from Keira Knightley. Like he does like that concept of like bigger artists stealing from little artists. But anywho. Okay. Well, I mean, Rudd is just charming, right? Like he has that specific brand of charm that we kind of love. He's a very, like, you know, I know that like people say Hanks had that Jimmy Stewart in him, but I feel like Rudd has more Jimmy Stewart in him. Like the affableness of it.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I guess. I mean, I'll watch it. Like, when it comes on streaming, I will watch it. Like, it's one of those streaming movies where you, like...
I think it's definitely a good... It's also not long at all.
It's like 90 minutes?
It's a easy enough watch. Mm-hmm.
It's not 2.5 hours.
It probably actually could have been about 15 minutes shorter. But, I, you know, 90 minutes is probably a good... There's a little bit of, like, fluff in there, especially with the Jonas character, because it's kind of like once you know or understand where that guy's coming from, like that he's maybe not the like affable, like everyman kind of type that you think he might be.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I don't need to see like, oh, this is the life of the rock star thing. We grew up, we're all in like this massive social media era, and we know what that lifestyle looks like. I don't need 15 minutes of you showing me like, oh yeah, it's all, you know, parties and, you know, women and shit like that. So it's way more, actually the time spent with that character would have been better spent with Rudd and his family and his band and like, because that's way more interesting and kind of just not trashy TV. Like, I don't know. It's probably just me being jaded from, like, the barrage of, you know, influencer, like, rock star kind of bullshit that
yeah.
just every... It's like that in politics. So, yeah, I get a little... jaded with that stuff, but I do think it's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie, so certainly better than Crime 101. So
I mean, it's in limited release right now. It doesn't look like it's gonna do a lot, and that's sad. I mean, like, you know, we need the mid-budget movie. We definitely need the mid-budget movie.
It's more than it, like, it would be nice if it did more money, but more than anything, it's nice that, not that Paul Rudd's a superstar, but yeah. like he's become kind of one of those, like, yeah, you know who Paul Rudd is, you know?
Yes. No, and absolutely. That, a brand.
A guy like him is still willing to do shit like this, or Death of a Unicorn, from last year, which is a movie that I greatly enjoyed, that I get was not for everyone, but like that's also kind of why I enjoyed it, because like, oh, this movie is not for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's not the only one. Like, Rudd does a lot of like small to mid budget shit, you know. He is like, you think it's like, oh, those are the roles that Adam Scott gets, right? Because they're kind of comps.
Yes.
You know, like even though they're both distinctly themselves, but you can kind of like, you could kind of swap them in a lot of places. And Rudd is still out there. Like, if it's something he's interested in doing, like if the script hits him or whatever, he's there, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just it's nice to see. So
it definitely is. Like I do like, I mean, I appreciate Rudd and I appreciate his choices. Like we talked about in Death of a Unicorn is that I think we had a whole conversation about it. I think that was the primary conversation of Rudd does these things when nobody else does. Like he takes his chances, and because he had, you know, he made Ant-Man money. Like people forget how big Ant-Man was. Like that was like, he was smart, right? Like he did the movie right at the apex of his career where he was like in his mid 40s. Everybody loved him. Like the people that the kids loved him and the adults loved him. And he made this movie and he made a lot of money. Right. So he had the money to he has now the juice to make movies that he wants to make and not necessarily movies that have to be hits because he has Marvel money and he can go back to them. Like he's going to be like Chris Hemsworth, right? Hemsworth is going to go back to, is going to play Thor until he's in his 50s. Why? Because he's a fucking, like a freak of nature, right? Like he's got that body that, like Chris Hemsworth still looks 20, even though he's approaching, like I think he's actually 42 now.
Paul Rudd is 57.
Mm-hmm.
57. Like, speaking of like Halle Berry type, like, holy shit.
Like, yeah, you don't age.
57, dude. Like, it is crazy that you look that good at 57.
Yep.
Like, I mean, he doesn't look 22, but he damn sure doesn't look 57. I mean, Paul Rudd looks like he's in his 40s.
Yeah. So. But I mean, like, being close to 60 and being, like, and looking like you're in your 40s, that's a deal, right?
Yeah.
That means, like, you know what it is? Like, I can tell you exactly what it is. Like, it's just staying out of the sun. Like, it's staying out of the sun and not smoking and drinking. I guarantee you, Rudd, he maybe drinks an occasional beer. He's from the Midwest, right? So, like, the worst thing he probably does is eat red meat. And even then, if he had not eaten red meat, he probably would look even better. But he probably stays out of the sun because he's from the Midwest. And he fucking, like, I know for a fact that they say that he still lives in Kansas City. Like, he still has a home there. So
yeah,
he probably,
I mean, he's at the damn Chiefs games all the time.
All the time, exactly. Him and Rob Riggle, but Riggle just flies out there.
Henry Winkler, too.
Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, Rudd's going to be, like the weirdest part is, like, some of these guys are going to be around for a long time. And Rudd is, like, one of those guys that's just going to, he's going to, like.
I mean, I guess in that way, it is comparable to Jimmy Stewart. Because, I mean, Jimmy Stewart was acting for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's Power Ballad, good movie, not great. I'm interested to hear what you think of it. When we finally get around to seeing it.
Yeah. So. I saw a couple of movies. One movie that I want to just like showcase to everybody because it's coming out this weekend and like, we're not going to talk about it because I know that you haven't seen it, but I saw it a couple of months ago, and I flipped my shit for it. It's the best movie of the year so far. This is, like, it's called The Furious. It's a martial arts action film.
I do kind of want to see it. Like, it looks incredible, but also, those kind of movies aren't usually my thing, so.
It's a very much, like, okay, so, like, the plot is very kind of like stripped down because of the fact that it's the fights. It's all about the fights. It's basically this man, this guy, his like a working class guy, his daughter is kidnapped by sex traffickers and, or like a child trafficking ring. And then he just goes on the hunt for her. And it's just basically essentially a chase movie. There are two chase movies out this year. Or this weekend, and I will tell you this one beats the other one by a country mile. And it's not to take away from, again, a disclosure day, we're going to get into it, but The Furious, it has a 30-minute finale that I am still thinking about 2 months later that I cannot get out of my head how they actually did some of the things that they do in this 30-minute finale that are just defy logic. There are takes that last up to 2 to 3 minutes, and there's no cuts because there's no way to cut. And this movie is a lower budget movie, so you know that there's no like AI CGI assists, and it's just like it's a movie that is purely action, and it's something that I haven't seen in a long time. And I will tell you, it is stunning. This movie is just like I said, it's as soon as I saw, like I got out of the theater, I literally wanted like the representative that like I saw it in an advanced press screening, of course, and they were like, how is it? I'm like, I want to go back in and see that shit again. Like, I wish I had it on 4K so that I could just sit there and rewind certain scenes because my brain can't figure out how they sustained that level of action. And she goes, oh, don't worry. The 4K is going to have a whole bunch of behind the scenes stuff. And you're going to know that this was like, if your brain can't get around it, it's going to be even worse because all of this stuff was real. Like, they did this real for real and they're going to prove it. And I was like, oh my God. It's just, it's one of those movies that is all action, but there's nothing wrong with that because that's what you're there for. And they do action. This is like action done in the way that we don't see it anymore. Not even the John Wick guys do this, because the John Wick guys, there's a lot of CGI assist in that stuff, especially if you watch the behind the scenes. It's still, there's a still big, a huge component, but this is like low budget John Wick. This is like guys like that could fucking murder themselves because it's the kind of feeling that you got if you saw The Raid for the first time and you were like, holy shit, how did they do? What are they? Life is cheap in Thailand, I guess, because it looks like they murdered some dudes in this movie. And that's the same exact feeling that you get from The Furious, is that if you're an action junkie, if you're a guy that love like me, I mean, you know, Jackie is like one of my favorites. If you like Jackie, if you like Jet Li, if you like The Raid, if you like these movies that like are on that defy, like they're like the way that like I like to say they're like Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire, like they defied gravity. That's what The Furious is. It's just like a throwback to that kind of style of movie, is where things are like things your brain can't process it because it's kind of like what Nolan gets at sometimes, but it's an entire movie of that where your brain just cannot function. It doesn't know how to function because you're going, how is this possible? Because your brain has been trained to think, oh, it's all CGI. But then when you see it and there's no CGI, like you can tell your brain is going, no CGI here. No fucking Tom Cruise CGI shit here. This is all like real for real. Yeah, like I cannot implore people enough, if they have a theater that is showing this, do not wait for home video. It will lose something in the translation. Like any of those Jackie movies. Like I'm watching, like there's a 4K box set that Arrow is bringing out of Jackie's biggest hits, like the Hong Kong ones, like starting with Rumble in the Bronx. And I rewatched it. Like I always rewatch it, but the 4K is really nice. But like I always have a twinge, like a tear in my eye, because I still remember seeing Rumble in the Bronx in the theater, and there's a difference between seeing a Jackie movie in the theater and Jackie movie on home video. And that's what I would make the hard sell on The Furious is that, yeah, go see it in the theater. It's big, it's ballsy, and your brain will just melt at the action.
We might. Depending on how long it plays, because the next couple of weeks there's like two movies at least every weekend that we want to see.
Yeah.
So if it sticks around for like 3 or 4 weeks, we're gonna hit like a little lull, and so we might wind up going to check that out. So, but you did get to stream another movie that I talked about a while back, and you finally got to catch up with it. So really interested in what you thought about it. And if it was a different, experience from what I had, because you did get to see it at home. I saw it in the theater. So
yeah, they will kill you. So like, just a little bit of background before I get into what I'm going to talk about with this movie. I love this this guy Kirill Skokolov's first movie. Why don't you just die? He's a Russian filmmaker. I saw this movie because Arrow Video released a Blu-ray of the movie as a kind of like an introduction to the world, because Russian filmmakers, I mean, other than Russia, nobody watches Russia. Like, it's like Russian automobiles. Like, the only people that watch Russian, the only people that buy Russian automobiles are Russians or the Chinese when they're forced to. That movie is great. Like, it is a great little mean Coen Brothers-esque, Raimi-esque, film noir that's like hyper realized. So I kind of knew what I was getting into when I watched They Will Kill You, but I did not. I was not expecting it to be so Tarantino meets Raimi. Yeah. Like, it's very, like, and I remember even us having the conversation. I was like, fucking Logan was right. It is Tarantino meets Raimi. But here's the thing, is that it's too Tarantino when you want it to be Raimi, and it's too Raimi when you want it to be Tarantino.
Yep, that's absolute perfect way to put it. Like, it was, every time I wanted it to be something, it was like, oh, you're just doing Tarantino, man.
Yeah.
And for that, like, the real action beats, that's fine. Like, I think most of those, even the more like ridiculous moments, work pretty well. Like, I think that, but there was a lot of it that wasn't the action scenes, that it still felt like you were trying to ape Tarantino, when it would have been way better to like, let's Raimi it up a little bit. There is one specific segment that I'm hoping you found as absolutely delightful as I did, and it might be the thing that like absolutely saved the entire movie for me.
What section? Because there's
the eyeball.
Oh God, the eyeball. Well, that's where I was like, this is fucking Raimi. This is Raimi. The fucking, when it, like, my favorite part of the movie is when it's rolling, but then it gets to the from level one to level two, and you're looking at like, how the fuck is it? Oh damn! Okay, yeah. That's hilarious. It has so all, much personality. All
practical too. Yeah, like they did it practically, which it shows. Like,
yes,
it is such a brilliant piece of like, it is like pastiche, but it's a thing that nobody does anymore.
No.
And it's something that in a more, let's say, American film, or more like a big budget studio kind of film, it's the kind of thing that'd be like, we don't really have the money, so you can't spend like 5 minutes on that. We're going to make it a CGI effect and you'll do it. You've got like 2 minutes, which, I mean, it might only really be 2 minutes in the movie, but it stays with that eyeball for such a long time.
Long time.
it's just, it's funny. It's a little like
gross.
Yeah,
gross. A little gross.
But it works so well that that's the thing about the movie. The parts of the movie that work really well work really, really well. But like, you didn't spend enough time. You really didn't spend enough time building the world.
No, it it's weird because it's like I wanted more time with Tom Felton, because Jesus Christ, that little squirt ass is so good. Like, he's
so much fun to watch, man. Like,
yes.
Did you ever get around to seeing Feckham Hall?
Yes, I did. Like, we never actually talked about Feckham Hall and how fucking hilarious that fucking stupid movie is. It is both the smartest and the stupidest movie I've seen in a long time. And his character, him,
yeah,
and Damian Lewis are fucking
I love Damian Lewis. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen Damian Lewis do, like, legit, like, it's not legit, but, you know, this kind of comedy.
Yeah.
I've loved Damian Lewis as an actor for the longest time. But it, like, actually, going back to, like, when they announced they were, when Zack Snyder was like, I'm going to do Watchmen, I was like, Damian Lewis needs to play Rorschach. Like,
yeah.
Because he would have been perfect. Not that we didn't get a good Rorschach. We did. But Damian Lewis, I was like, that's the guy, man. So I love Damian Lewis. It was great seeing him do, like, the wacky kind of thing. But going back to Tom Felton, like, in the last year, I've seen Tom Felton give two, like, desperately different performances in movies, but both equally just delightful and hilarious. And, like, I wish this guy, like, I don't want to say got more work. I'm sure he does whatever, like, he does not what he wants, but he does the things he wants to do. He doesn't just take jobs just to take them. He probably doesn't have to. He's probably living off Potter residuals. Doesn't matter. So, it's just great, man.
Yeah, he really is great. Like, he's actually on Broadway playing Draco.
I saw again. That. That's like, that's exciting. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen the play. Like, I've seen the play and like. To know the role that he has and him taking it on is kind of like if I, like, I have friends that are in New York and they keep on asking me to come out to New York. If I went out to New York, it would be to see Tom. Like, it would, part of the reason why I would do it is to go to see Tom Felton on Broadway. That's how interested I am in the role that he takes on and the part, how big the part is. But going back to They Will Kill You, it's an interesting film and a really weird counterpoint. Like, the other thing that we kind of, like you mentioned, was it's wild that they released this literally a week after they Ready or Not, Here I Come. I liked Ready or Not, Here I Come more.
Oh, like, me too. By far.
By a country mile. But I'm going to say this, like, Zazie Beetz really doesn't get the amount of work that she should get.
Here, I agree. I don't understand why. Deadpool 2, like, all around is a pretty fun movie.
Yeah.
She is maybe the best part of that movie.
Her domino, which is weird because it's like Vanessa should be domino, but she's not domino. She's a different, what they did was so weird, but her domino, she should have, like, if they do end up making an X-Force film, like, please bring her back. Please bring her, like, please fucking.
She just got, like, it's not even the same as the exact same as the character on the page, but yes. She got, it's like understanding the assignment. Like, you understand, like, the world that you're in, and it's like very similar with this movie. Like, maybe the character catches on to, like, stuff a little too quick, but, like, the actress, like, her, she understands what movie she's in. She understands, like, how to play this. And she's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's just that the movie fails her at certain points.
Oh, you know? Definitely. It fails her, but also, it's so difficult to, like, balance both. Like, I don't know how the one thing that they got right was there's this thing where she is innately sexy, but also deadly lethal. Like,
yeah.
And there's no, like, there's this right balance of, like, it's an exploitation film where it is exploitative because it does those certain things that, like, oh, well, she's a very attractive young lady, very athletic, and they're going to show her off. And she allows that. But then at the same time, it also goes, but she's also lethal, and we are going to show that, and we are going to, like, couple it with geyser amounts of blood. And I just don't know how they did that, like, tone right, but they kind of got it right, which it's like, I wish more films could kind of toe that line between, like, the whole thing of, like, it's okay to be sexy, but it's also okay to be, like, a badass motherfucker and kill people. Yeah. And it's only...
she kind of does that, like, extremely well. Like, it's not...
Yes.
Like, she did it in this, Deadpool. Deadpool. One.
Yep.
God, what's the Bullet Train?
Yeah, like, Bullet Train.
And she's not a badass in Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, but, like, she kind of... like is borderline, like you can see that there. And she, I mean, that the cast of that movie is, I know you loved it more than I did, but like the cast is incredible and she's great in it.
Oh, she is. She's amazing. Her between like, she manages to have the right amount of like tired chemistry with Michael Peña in that movie. Yeah. I know that a lot of people were like, well, they don't have chemistry. I'm like, well, it's anti-chemistry because you never, like, this is a certain kind of relationship. But yeah, she is great. She is the reason to see that movie. Like her, Tom Felton, and of course, the somebody that we didn't talk about, though her accent slips in and out, is Patricia Arquette, who, yeah. I mean, Ben Stiller, thank you for making her a thing again, because she's so great. Like her, like she did this Prison Breakout mini series with him as a director, and then, like, you know, she got an Emmy out of it, and it prompted him to do like tell them that they were just casting her in what's the one that we like, the one that's coming in, that just had its season 3. Good Lord. The Adam Scott.
The Apple show.
Yeah, the Apple. Oh, good Lord. Severance. Yeah. Severance, where she's amazing in Severance. And I feel like this is them trying to give her something to do more. Like they realize. And so like, it's like bringing her back. And I'm like, she's great. Like, though the pig head thing is just kind of like, it was a bridge too far. That's what kind of like, I was like, okay, I'm done. This is a little too silly. This is a little too, like, you should have started the Raimi stuff, like kept the Raimi tone and not the whatchamacallit tone, not the Tarantino tone. That's where it gets all weirdly muddled and makes the wrong decisions is towards that ending.
You know, that's James Remar doing the pig head.
Yes, I do. I had to look it up. I was like, who the fuck is that? And then, I've had my James Remar this week because I got to see, I just reviewed, you know what people think, like, I don't know why people gave Mortal Kombat 2 shit, because Mortal Kombat Annihilation is the fucking worst. Why you recast James Remar for Christopher Lambert, I will never understand.
Yeah, I like James Remar, but, like, that is not a, like, that's just bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a good comp. Like,
it is not. It's
different. Like, we were talking about, like, the Adam Scott, Paul Rudd thing, and yeah. How you, like, can you, like, I, at no point would I be like, oh yeah, Remar's like a good comp for Christopher Lambert. No, never. I don't think so. Like, it's a totally different kind of delivery. Like, beyond the fact that they're not even the same, they're not from the same country.
Yes.
Like, it's just a different way that they, like, deliver their lines. So, like, you're not getting... It's just like Raiden is a whole new character in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. It's like, that movie was not good. I saw it in theaters and I don't ever want to see it again. So.
The 4K will not, like, the 4K is beautiful, but I was like, yeah, I don't understand why people like this movie.
Maybe it's because Remar, not that Remar only does high class things, but he is like, nothing against Christopher Lambert, but Christopher Lambert is like a B movie actor.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
That's true.
Remar, like James Remar is in Oppenheimer. Like, yeah, he's in a Christopher Nolan movie, which is becoming less of a, like, I was in a Chris Nolan movie because, you know, like, I like, at this point, like, Machine Gun Kelly is going to be in the next Christopher Nolan movie. Like, he's just, it's like he's casting anybody, but whatever. Remar, like, is more of a thespian, I guess, maybe, than, like, when he talks, you just kind of take him super seriously.
Yeah, though Christopher Lambert is in Hail Caesar, and
yeah, that's, yeah,
and also he's also in Loaded Weapon 1, and he's in Ghost Rider, and he's in one of my favorite movies, fucking Fortress. Like, you know,
Fortress is one of those, like, old, we talk about, like, the old school home video days.
Yes.
Like, going to Blockbuster. Like, Fortress is one of those movies where it's like, I don't, as a kid, I was like, oh, this is great. Like, and now I would probably watch it now and be like, this is so bad. Like, what did I like?
It's like, because it's made by the same guy, because he did it as a 1-2 combo. Like, it's like how I feel about Robot Jocks. Like, Robot Jocks, like, Stuart Gordon, he made both of those movies. And I just remember, like, knowing who Stuart Gordon was before. Like, because I was a little kid when I saw these. I didn't know about Reanimator and Bride of the Reanimator, right? Like, I had no idea. Like, I didn't get, until I got into high school, I was like, holy shit, this is the same guy that made one of my favorite movies. But I watched Robot Jocks, and I was like, this is quaint, but it's not the badass piece of cinema I thought it was when I was a kid, giant robots facing off against one another. Fortress is like the same thing. It's like, oh, it's a futuristic prison, when I guarantee you it was made with duct tape and cardboard, like, spray painted fucking, like, you know, silver and shit. But it doesn't mean that it isn't fun. It's just, it is what it is. But also Christopher Lambert, like, you know, I did see another movie, and I just want to mention it really quick because I know that you weren't a fan of it, but I thought it was hilarious. Hoppers.
I need to go back and rewatch. I think I was just not in the headspace for that movie. And I do, since it's streaming on Disney Plus, I do want to go back and rewatch it and kind of reevaluate my opinion on it. But you liked it.
I thought it was a lot of fun, and it's mid-tier Pixar. Like, I definitely like, but like, it's weird to think that Pixar has been making mid-tier Pixar, but mid-tier Pixar is like the best fucking Illumination can do. Like, that's the weirdest part, is that I know people are going to give me shit for saying, like, well, what about the Minions? And aren't you excited about that? I mean, yeah, I am, but there's no craft in it. It's still slop. It's like, they make slop. Like, I as soon as they started doing, like, the Minion, like, that's fucking slop. Like, you're making the most crass movies possible. They're at least, like, Pixar is at least making, like, Elio is a fun movie. Like, I know it made no money.
I haven't seen Elio. I gotta get to it.
I think that you would have a lot of fun. It's back to the emotional storytelling. Like, it's both emotional and a fun adventure, sci-fi adventure. But Hoppers, like, the main reason to watch it is that John Hamm, aka Juan Jamon, is having the time of his life playing the most John Hamm role he has since Don Draper. Like, Jerry the Mayor is like the absolute worst piece of shit, but is so much fun to listen to and watch and like have John Hamm do what he does. But also, like, I like the fact that they take the Avatar, like, I mean, like, they call the concept out, but what I find smart about the movie, and I didn't expect, is that they take that concept, and this is something that I feel like doesn't happen a lot in movies anymore. They take it to the nth degree. They take it to places that you don't think that they're going to take, that you can't even, like, the writers are smarter than you in this movie. And I find that hilarious. Like when, like, and spoilers for a movie that not many people have seen. Well, I mean, it did actually make quite a decent coin because it got word of mouth out. But skip this part is when the Dave Franco butterfly goes into the John Hamm human. Holy shit. I died and kept on laughing the entire time. Like Dave Franco, like when are we, like, I know why he isn't a big star. It's because he's a Nepo baby and people keep on thinking of his piece of shit brother. But at this point, he keeps on doing things that are hilarious. And him playing that little worm, the little, like, and
he's pretty fun.
He's fucking hilarious. Like, the entire voice cast is great, but, like, I was not expecting Bobby Moynihan with a comb over being like the emotional, like, core and, like, the kind of soothing, like, can't we all just get along soul of a movie that I needed in 2026? But he is, like, he's so good. It's just a good, like, I think you should give it another chance because I think that you'll find a very delight. It's still mid, but it's upper mid Pixar.
Yeah. It's fun. The Illumination to Pixar comp is pretty, like, it's so, like what you're saying, so accurate where it's like, it's a reference nobody will really get, but it's like the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers.
Yes.
Where it's like, I can appreciate the Three Stooges, but the Marx Brothers elevates comedy to like art, man.
Yep.
Like, and the Stooges are just like poking each other in the eye. Like sometimes the Marx Brothers are tripping up and doing goofy things, but like there's an elevation to it. And Pixar definitely is like that elevated kind of thing. And Illumination does seem to always just fall to what's the lowest common denominator joke we can make here, and kind of just leans into that. Every once in a while it'll get a little smart, but it's not often. But yeah, I do want to revisit Hoppers. It's weird that they both have movies that are just like Hop. Like,
yeah,
they couldn't call it Hop. They're like, let's call it Hoppers, which I also think is just not a good title.
No,
you know, it seems to be a year for like this movie does not have a good title.
well, it's funny because like they are basically in competition with one another these next like this year because they both have two movies out and they both had like. So, like, in the first part of the year, like, I mean, Hoppers is by far... I wish I had seen this in the theater. Like, because, like, the
AI... It is better than Super Mario
Brothers. Oh, Jesus Christ,
Mario Brothers. Galaxy. Whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah.
Super Mario Galaxy. Yeah, it is by and far, like, a much... It's a film. Super Mario Galaxy is...
It's
like,
slop. Yeah, it's slop. It's slop. It's slop to let Chris Pratt make more money.
It's junk food. Like, and Hoppers is at least a film. I feel like it's going to be
the opposite.
I early reviews for Toy Story are really, really good.
Yeah,
and I have a lot of. I'm an outlier in that Toy Story 4 did make a lot of money, but I know I'm an outlier in thinking like it's actually an excellent film and that I just recently rewatched. I stand by that. I think it is phenomenal. Maybe not Toy Story 3 level, but I mean, at this point there have been 4 Toy Story movies and none of them are bad. And that's amazing. So, I mean, we've gotten a shit ton of Minion and Despicable Me's, and the ship sailed on those being good a long time ago. So, I don't feel like it's going to be any different. Like, I hope Minions and Monsters gets a little bit elevated, but I am going to go see it.
Yeah.
But only for, like, it's literally something we talked about it, and then the trailer came out, and we're like, oh, shit. They did our idea before we even came up with it. Like, it's the same idea that they had. We'll just put them in old Hollywood, you know, see what happens. So, I'm getting more excited for Toy Story because I don't think that trailer is good, though.
No, it's not. Well, okay, so, like, I didn't think... Okay, look, I don't think that Toy Story 4 is terrible. I just think, like... Okay, so this is the one time you're going to hear me admit this. Tarantino recently brought out a take, and I completely agree with him, is that... He's like, I have no compunction to see Toy Story 4 or Toy Story 5 because Toy Story 3 is a perfect ending. I don't have the need to see the next Toy Story movies because Toy Story, like, that's what disappointed me about 4. It was like, it kept on distracting me that why the fuck are we, why does this movie exist? Toy Story 3 is such a beautiful ending.
If you could sell Toy Story without Buzz and Woody and like a couple of the other like long-standing characters, and you could just have Toy Story 4 and it even be called Toy Story 4 and it be about these new characters more or less.
Yes.
I think that it would probably be an even better movie, but the problem is you cannot sell that franchise
without
those characters. So you have to, like, even coming back for this one, like, okay, but you're still finding a way to bring Woody back into it because, I mean, spoilers for Toy Story 4, but, like, it ends with Woody not being part of the group anymore.
Yeah.
And that, to me, like, as great as the ending of Toy Story 3 is, like, and as great of a movie as that is, like, it does end with them, yes, finding a new place, but all finding a new place together. And maybe it's just the point I was at in my life because, like, I was moving, or I had just moved, like, out of my longtime home. And so that probably has a lot to do with it, where it's like, oh, it's not always, like, just about you staying together with this group of people that you've known, you know, your entire life or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes finding your purpose is moving on from that. And, like, and also coupled with the idea that it's something that Ryan and I used to talk about a lot is that, like, you know, the bad guy isn't always the bad guy. Sometimes it's a misunderstood person. Now, modern, like a lot of modern films, I've used that to just, you know, try to reframe, like, quote, the bad guy, like truly evil characters, into being like, yeah, but look, he had such a sad life. But like in Toy Story 4, the quote, bad guy is this doll who was defective and, like, doesn't want to sit in an antique store because nobody wants her because she's defective. So she wants Woody's voice box. And what happens in the movie is that Woody gives her his voice box.
Yeah.
Like, he gives up that part of himself because it would make her whole. And, like, I agree. Toy Story 3 is perfect. But, and I don't, just the message of the fourth movie is so much bigger than what I think really any of the other movies tried to do. And I really appreciate that about that movie. And I don't know. It's truly, truly great. I'm, you know, hopeful for Toy Story 5. So,
I mean, I like, okay, look, this is one of those things where it's like, the biggest comp I can give to you how I feel about it is the way that some people feel about Indiana Jones. Last Crusade, you see them riding off into the sunset, and that's it.
I agree with you on that. Like,
yeah,
I do agree with you there that, like, that was a thing that should have been put to bed and been like, and that's the end of that chapter and no more. Like we had, which I speaking of Indiana Jones, I'm so tempted to get these. So first of all, we also had more adventures, you know, with young Indiana Jones. But I guess because so Marvel published a long-running Indiana Jones comic book. And because of, like, licensing issues, because of just where everything was, they've never been able to really reprint those in any kind of, like, substantial way. Like, I think some oversized editions got printed, like, at some point, but it was all still in that time frame. And now, because everything is housed under one umbrella, they are collecting into gorgeous hardcovers the entire series that they published, The Adventures of Indiana Jones. And like you volume can pre-order
volume one and two.
Yes. And you can pre-order them right now. Like I don't know what the pre-order price on Amazon is, but I use a place called Discount Comic Book Service. And if you pre-order them right now, they're like 45% off, which is really good. And I'm so tempted to get both of them. I've never read those stories.
I already ordered them. as soon as that announcement came out
2 weeks ago. I was like, I gotta look for those. And then it's such a good deal and I do want to read them, but also it is a lot of money. So
yeah,
even at 45% off, I was like, that's still like $120.
That's about what I paid for both volumes from Amazon. I haven't paid yet.
They'll charge you when they ship.
Exactly. And
you'll probably get a little, because they will be discounted. They just, you know, give you like their initial offering, and then it's like, oh, we're gonna list them for this, so you saved an additional 20% or whatever. Like, hate to give that asshole more money, but like,
at a certain point, I'm artfully commerce, like I try to, like I need to survive, like, you know, let's be honest here. And so like, you know, I go with whatever the cheapest is and what I can afford at the time. So it's just one of those things.
We were shopping the other day, and we had to go to Walmart, and there's this guy walking around talking to his wife, and this struck me as so funny. She said something about saving money, and he was like, well, we're shopping at Walmart because we are cheap. And like my first thought was, where else, like Target, but like where else can you go now,
Dollar
other
Tree?
Than online
Dollar like, Tree.
I mean, yeah, but you can only get so much
that, Dollar Tree. Yeah,
so, it's a, like,
yeah.
It's like
there's nothing else you can do.
There's nowhere else to shop. There's not mom and pop department stores anymore.
And even then, they always charged a premium. They always you cannot get
Sears doesn't exist anymore. No. Like big department stores are on the like they're dying. So, but. Like, anyway, that's a whole other. You're talking about like it's like but where else am I going to get it? So
yeah,
you know,
and like yeah, that's true. And just one last thing about Toy Story 5 that really annoys me: why the fuck did Taylor Swift? I know why, but why?
It's a marketing gimmick, and I mean, good for her.
I guess
the movie probably needs it more than she does, for sure. But I don't know, that it didn't really bother me. Before we jump into Disclosure Day, one more thing I want to bring up. I just started watching. You may have seen the show. Season 2 just dropped. And so I was like, oh, I did mean to watch that. So I started back at season 1. I'm watching Deli Boys on Hulu.
I've not seen that. How is that?
It is really funny.
Okay.
I think you would enjoy it. It is very Coen-esque.
Huh. Interesting.
Like,
okay.
Like Raising Arizona level of Coen kind of hijinks mixed with like violence. It is bloodier than most Coen things.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of blood. Not excessively gory, but there's definitely once an episode where things get a little crazy. The premise is this guy came from Pakistan, opened a convenience store, and then made a mint supposedly by marketing like this 96 or 150 ounce, some giant plastic coffee cup that has this little peg so it still fits in your cup holder.
Oh, and he's like,
that's how I made all my money. That's why these ABC convenience stores, you know, be part of our team. It starts with like this commercial thing. And so you think like this is how he made his money. And like he has one son who is like the responsible business savvy kid who always just wants to make his dad proud. And the other who is a worthless layabout and just lives off his dad's money and thinks that what's the point of having all this money if I'm not living a hedonistic lifestyle. Well, they are called to meet the dad at a golf course because the dad wants to get into the golf course business. He's going to start opening golf courses. In the course of this all happens in the first 5 minutes of the show. The dad is hit in the head with a golf ball and dies. So his two sons stand to inherit the business. Only it turns out that is not how he made all his money. He is under federal investigation. They seize all of their assets and they lose everything. And the first 5 minutes, except this one convenience store that was not incorporated with the business that he still owns. They get that one store.
Hence Deli Boys.
But here's the thing. That store was what they were using to run drugs. And that is how he made his money. And they get this like crash course into like what the actual family business is.
Uh-huh.
And they are not, the whole thing is like, they are not these people. And like they're just, it's fish out of water kind of, you know, like Nicolas Cage in Raising Arizona, where it's like, oh, you're not this guy. Like, you're really not this guy.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where the comedy comes from. It's really fun. It's really funny. If there's a Indian or Pakistani actor, they are going to show up in this show. Like, Kamel is in the new season.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
But like every time you turn around, it's like, oh, I know that person. Oh, I know that person. Oh, I know that person. I think you would really dig it. I would say if you watch the first episode and you're like, maybe just stop because it's pretty much just more of that.
Okay.
But yeah, I really, really like it. I'm excited to like get caught up for the second season. I didn't even know it was getting another season. They shortened it though. It went from a 10 episode season to a 6 episode season.
Oh, that sucks.
So definitely not like kind of penny pinching there, but it is what it's always nice that we get anything, you know, with any kind of representation, even though a lot of this is like negative representation, but it's for comedic effect. Maybe the best thing in the show though is, depending on what you watch is what you know him from, but the actor who plays like Raj's dad, but if you watch Seinfeld, you know him as Babu. The owner, the restaurant owner that Jerry accidentally gets deported.
Yes.
So he plays one of the family members who's in the shadier side of the business, and seeing him play a Godfather, a character that would be at home like in the Godfather franchise, even if he's a little goofy, is really, really interesting. Like, that's one of the things that I really like about the show, is like, these are actors I've seen do so many different things, but they've always been kind of sort of typecast into that one thing.
Yeah.
And they're getting to play different archetypes, and that's kind of fun.
Oh, okay. Well, I it's been on my list, so I'm definitely like looking, like I definitely wanted to actually watch it. So yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, Widow's Bay got picked up for season 2.
Yes,
I know
it did.
It's a show I've mentioned. I know you're diving into it. So I will say this. I know I'm way ahead of you, because I think last time we talked, you had watched like the first episode.
That is correct. Yeah. No. Yeah.
And so I'm excited that there's a season 2. The finale airs this coming week. If what's happening in the show keeps happening, I don't understand how there's going to be a season 2, but I don't know. We'll see. It's brilliant. It is an absolutely brilliant show. And I'm so happy it got a season 2. So, anyway, we want to talk about some Spielberg and Disclosure Day.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
So, all right. In a year of badly named movies, maybe the worst named movie opened this weekend, Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day. And I think you're right. This is the first like Spielbergian Spielberg movie we've gotten, like definitely since we started this podcast, but like going back a long time. Like I was looking at his credit list. I was like, I don't know that we've gotten anything like this. Like Ready Player One was like 2018. And yep. I wouldn't even say that's really Spielbergian.
No, that's Spielberg playing on Spielberg.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's not like really, that's not Spielberg. That's like Spielberg playing on Spielberg. Like it's like an echo chamber. It's like if Tarantino decided to make a Tarantino movie. Like, do you know what I mean? Like Tarantino makes movies, but like if he made a movie about making a Tarantino movie, that's what kind of like Ready Player One is. So yeah.
So what did you think about Disclosure there?
So I liked it. I didn't love it. It's, man, like, okay, so like the good. Man, this is a hell of a chase movie. Like, how he was able to make a 2.5 hour chase movie and it not feel like it's like have that breathless pace.
I watched two movies this week that are largely about chasing people and things. Both of them are 2.5 hours. One of them fucking cooked, and the other one bored the shit out of me. Of course, it was the Spielberg one that cooked, because yeah, it that 2.5 hours. Goes, man.
It goes. And like, here's the thing, is that he throws you off from the beginning because he opens with something that you do not expect him to do.
I was alarmed. I was like, wait. I was not worried about the movie, but I was like, this might wind up being lesser Spielberg. And when it opens in a first person shot in a wrestling ring, with like, I was like, wait, not what? Only could this be lesser Spielberg, this might actually suck. What, like, is this going to be like the War Horse of Spielberg's Alien films? What the fuck? And fortunately, it only takes about 2 minutes for everything to just divert from that, because it wasn't bad. It was just like, not what you're expecting, and a little rough for it. Like, it was weird, man.
I think he meant to throw us off, because, like, the thing that I was like, did they put the fucking wrong movie on? Is there a wrestling movie I'm not aware of?
Like, it feels like you're just in that scene in the first Tobey Spider-Man movie.
Yes.
Where he's just facing off against the chainsaw. And it's
exactly.
Like,
Bonesaw.
Bonesaw. Well, like, what the fuck is happening?
So, like, as a purely Spielbergian, like, chase action movie, man, that movie fucking cooks. I think that my biggest problem, and this is where I think that if I watch it more, maybe over time the edges will be smoothed, is that there are certain things, decisions that he made that I understand why he made them, but they are things that I was like, man, why did you get David Koepp to write this for you? Because he's not going to fight you on this. He's just going to let you do what you want to do. Yeah. And like, the biggest umbrage I have is what took me out of the film, and it's the one thing that took me out of the film, is how she gets Josh O'Connor's character out of captivity.
Yeah. So, I hate to immediately dive into negatives. I will say just things I like. I do agree. Like the movie like does just run so quick. The chase stuff, that like all of that stuff really plays. The visual effects aspect of just like the car chase stuff, like you can tell a lot of work was put into that, and it's not goofy or like too over the top ridiculous. It is like just the right amount of like cars, you know, getting flipped.
And yeah.
It feels real enough, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like an overtly, like, crass kind of car chase thing. And that's a lot of the movie. I think everybody in the movie is doing excellent work.
Oh,
I think the digital effects work when they have to. I was, like, in the trailer, the digital animals were off-putting, but I was like, that doesn't look good. But in the movie, it makes sense as to why they don't look good, because they're not supposed to look natural.
No, exactly. And exactly.
So that like really helped me reframe that worry. And so to get into the negative stuff, I this is what I told Spencer and Katie and Steph. I was like, 20 to 25 years ago, this movie would have been phenomenal.
Yep.
Here's the thing. It's not even like, oh, I think the government could be dirty and they might just shoot people. We have seen it with our own eyes. And not to get too real worldy, but unfortunately, I bring my real world experience into this movie. I couldn't really check my brain at the door, because it's not really that kind of movie. It's not a superhero film. So I know for a fact that it just wouldn't happen like this. Like, she would have been stopped. Like, at any point in time, it would have just been like, kill these people. Just kill them.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it held me back a lot from being able to just, like, I guess, give over to the experience of the movie, you know, and buy into, like, her being able to, like, show people, like, the things they needed to see to, like, really get to the heart of who they are. And I'm too cynical.
Yeah, for no, any of that. And also like here's the thing, is that the ending, and this is, I was going to save this for a little bit later. The ending doesn't work for me because
at all.
Because again, we know how people are. They would not all be watching their phones. This is Spielberg hoping that this is the way that humanity would act. But all of us knowing, Like, it probably not more like a that. Scorsese. A Scorsese. This is where Scorsese would have been like, no, you gotta change it, gotta change it.
Riot in the street. Like, on top of, like, so, again, I hate to just jump to the end, but, like, I did bring that up when we were talking about it afterwards. I was like, here's the thing about the end of that movie. Like, he's, Colin Firth's character standing there and, like, trying to stop them from the broadcasting this.
Yeah.
And his little side man, whatever, is like, do something. Aren't you going to do anything? And he just gives up. Yep. But, like, it would have been like, they all have guns. The thing to do is just shoot them. Like, that's what it would have been.
Well, unless you, like, okay, so, like, this is where, like, I feel like her powers would have been better suited if she could have just, like, basically Jean Grey'd them.
Right.
Like, that's where I was like, he doesn't want to be cynical about this. Man, this is fucking Spielberg to his bone. Because he'd much rather have them have a vision of somebody that they love and going, oh, love is the way. And not, like, not what I would think, which is, nah, you kind of probably want her to have Jean Grey. This is where I'm like, okay, so David Koepp just lets him do whatever he wants to do, and that's why I feel like they should never work together, is because they're, like, the worst in, like, if Spielberg is on a thing, his worst instincts take over. Hence why, like, let's go back to War of the Worlds with the sun thing. Like, supertext becomes text, right? Like, subtext becomes supertext becomes, like, text, and that doesn't work for me. And it's like, there's some, like, I understand that they're, like, it's the whole John Ford in him. Like, he can't help but be John Ford and be, like, very literal with things. And in 20 years, it's probably not going to matter. But right now, it does. And, like, the thing that bothers me that doesn't bother me anymore about War of the Worlds is that he didn't get a writer that didn't argue with him. He got David Koepp. And David Koepp did exactly what he wanted him to do, which is, let's make it all dark until the end, but let's have him. It's the same thing that happens at the end of Minority Report, where you get that title card where he goes, and the precogs lived a life, and they were like, what you should have said was, and DC had its first murder within the first 20 days. Because that's the reality. If Scorsese had made Minority Report, that shit would have shown us that murder at the end of it, right? Like, they all, like, the little precogs get to go off and then murder, stab, 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 stab. But this movie, it's like, there are smarter decisions that I feel like, you know who I feel like should have written this, and it's a dude that I know that you don't care for because he kind of made Star Wars meh to you, but Tony Gilroy, imagine. No,
I agree with that.
Like, and that's a fundamentally where I feel like I told somebody, this is a Spielberg Rorschach test. It's, there are going to be people that love this movie because it is so Spielberg. And there are going to be people that just outright reject it because it's a fucking Spielberg movie. Because it's so Mary Sue innocent about things that you're just like, what?
Yeah. And this is Kevin Spielberg's,
like, seventh film, I think.
Is it that many?
Yeah. Because they did. I mean, okay. So let's see.
Jurassic Park is the first. And, okay. And I feel like, Minority Report aside, I'd need to revisit that movie because I haven't seen it in a while, but, like, I also remember not loving Minority Report, just thinking it was good and fun. Jurassic Park is a perfect film. So,
anyway. Well, no, you were right, but that is also because it's kept editing. Like he gets, like, there's a reason why David Koepp didn't go on to write Spider-Man 2, is because he's a guy that you bring in to edit things. Like, when you're left,
it's not his story. It's him punching things up. I get what. So, which leads to the point of like, so the Lost World is their second project together.
And that is
the Lost World movie is not the same as the Lost World book.
No.
And so that's not a great movie. That's a movie with some really great sections. It's not a great movie, and its script, its direction, you're right. It is like their first, like, oh, maybe these two should not be doing, and they don't do anything together again to War of the Worlds, which again has some problems from what I remember.
Yeah.
And then Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was them.
Yep. And then you go right to Disclosure Day, even though he was a part of Dial of Destiny.
Well, that's not Spielberg.
Like, right. But it's a Spielberg property, right?
Kep has written a lot of things that I like beyond the Spielberg stuff that I do really like. He's some stuff I don't like, but like there is a lot of stuff in there that I think Zathura is a pretty solid movie.
Yeah, you know? It is. It is like it's. Like, but then he also handles the whatchamacallit movies, Good Lord.
The Ron Howard movies?
Yeah, the Inferno. The Dan Brown movies, yeah.
I can't really, like, I haven't read those books, but, like, from my understanding of, like, what they are, I'm like, I get how you read that and it's exciting. I don't know how you make that an exciting movie because it is video game fetch quests. Like that's all it is, you know, which Indiana Jones kind of is too, but they like going back to the OGs, like they're able to infuse it with like some action stuff. Like those movies are not like, oh, he's an action star. They're just like, oh no, like he's this guy who like can translate things. Like he doesn't throw punches, which negates all of like the fun of being an Indiana Jones type. Like you know things and you can punch a dude. Like, yeah, that kid, Robert, whatever his name is, he's not an action star. So
no,
I don't know if I'd like point to Kep and be like, he's the problem. I think the problem is that you're trying to adapt those movies.
No. I'm going to disagree with you because I will give you three. I will give you three movies that are all about dudes talking in offices that are thrilling techno thrillers from the 90s. Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger.
Yeah.
There is a way to adapt these. You're not interesting enough of a writer to like, he doesn't have,
you want him to be Aaron Sorkin with the dialogue, and he's not ever going to be Aaron Sorkin with the dialogue.
No, well, actually I want him to be John Milius who wrote all three of those,
yes,
which he's not. I mean, nobody's John Milius except for fucking John Milius. Right. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like he gets credit for things that aren't his doing. And that really bothers me because I know that I know. Okay. So like the whole thing is that the reason why War of the Worlds works is because everything I heard was Josh Friedman, who's actually writing Avatar movies with James Cameron now, and who wrote one of our favorite adaptations to TV, the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah, that dude is like, he does, talking about kept getting too much credit. Like that's a dude who does not get enough credit for, like, he's a solid fucking writer and he can like cut to the meat of things, the heart of things without like, and like change enough that it's like, oh, I made something old new again.
Yeah.
Like he's really, really good at that. I kept lesser. So, but to the point of this movie, like, I am in agreement, like, maybe, like, these two should not be in the same room together. Like, it's,
no.
Even though I think this is a really, really good movie, like, it just falls apart in a lot of places. And yeah. is Spielberg, like you said, doing his like hopeful kind of thing that unfortunately right now just doesn't, it just doesn't work for me. Like not in a movie that's like trying to be very real worldy. Like there's this overshadowing thing in the movie that's like ever present. Like we're about to go to war with another country. Like there could be nuclear weapons involved. And it's like, it's in the background, but they do kind of like keep inserting it every time you're around a TV. There's always like a newscast talking about like this war that's looming. And like, we're very much in that, like right now, like not in the movie, right now we are in this constant state of like fear that we're going to like a like actual war with somebody, not just you know, us playing bully and doing horrible things, like legitimate, like we're going to get attacked, not the made up shit that you hear. And on top of like the country is just falling apart anyway. Like, so you're setting it in that world, in the almost very real world, but you're not giving us like how we know the government and a lot of people would react to what is happening. Like you're still trying to be hopeful about how humanity would react to this. And unfortunately, what we've seen in the last 10 years tells us a very different story.
No, you're absolutely right. Like it's all weirdly, it's a tonal thing, right? Because the meat and the bones are there to do, like you almost want post 9/11, like you said, 25 years ago, Spielberg is the, like this movie would have been like, even then I feel like it would have been like, if this exact movie, it would have been tone deaf because I think that post 9/11 Spielberg, the one that made Munich, the one that made War of the Worlds, the one that made Minority Report, makes a different film with this. And I think it's the film that is a little bit more in line with, like, a little bit more cynical, a little bit harder. Like, the edges are a little bit harder. It's not to say that the movie doesn't have the harder edges. It's just, like, they're smoothed off by the ending because he wants to think the best of humanity. Like, that's the thing is that ultimately I feel like it comes down to, at this point, he's going, I choose to be, like, for me, it comes down to like this whole tonal thing of like, I choose to believe the best in humanity. And like, at the end of the day, I'm going to choose that. And that's why I say it's like a Spielberg Rorschach test, where it's like, this is no, like, there's no, like, for me, it feels like there's no difference between this and Close Encounters, because ultimately he's feeling the same way about humanity, is that ultimately that we're going to make a, we are not our inner demons. We are not, we are the angels of our better selves. Right. And I feel like he could have made a better argument for that. Yeah,
I appreciate that the movie, like we said, not to keep harshing on the cook's term, but it, like, it does like just keep going, like pounding, like just at a clip. And so it doesn't, there's not a lot of time it takes to stop and like, not get preachy, but like breathe on things and like just give you time to ruminate. Probably because if you do, it just starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
And so, but because you don't do that and you don't like, help us get to the place that you think we should be at. Like, the big, big thing at the end, right, is that this creature that the government has kept alive and tortured and like just all of that is still alive, that he managed to escape with it, keep this alien alive, and now this alien is going to come to speak to everyone, and that's where you end the movie. And I get why you end it there, but like at the same time, it's just like, okay, well, you're not, again, you're setting it in the real world. The world we live in is super, like, it's hard not to be cynical right now because people will just do the worst fucking thing. Like, collectively,
yeah,
will do the worst fucking thing. And so it's hard to buy into that, and you don't give us that side of things. Like, we don't get to see Coleman Domingo's relationship with this creature. We don't even get why Coleman Domingo is able to do a lot of the things he does. And it's, none of it is like really supernatural. It's just like he has all these beliefs about things.
Well, and he's super empathetic also. Like, yeah, like that's the thing that I feel like I got, like, when I really started to think about it, and then listening to Domingo like talk in interviews about the character, is that he's empathetic to a point to where he's almost like a true empath. And that, but this is all stuff that you don't get from the Kep script. Again, Kep stuff falls apart because he's so concerned with the chase. He's so concerned with the plot that you don't get the character-based stuff that you want. Like the stuff that you, like, what's the stuff that we really love in Jurassic in the first half? Is getting to know the characters, right?
Oh, yeah, before everything just goes to shit. And like, okay, so to that point, the stuff that really, really works in the movie, like the Emily Blunt stuff, I think for the most part, maybe until you get to the end, but like the Emily Blunt, like early stuff really fucking works. Like her and,
Wyatt Russell.
Yeah. Who I didn't even know was in this fucking movie. Like, yeah. I was like, oh shit, it's Wyatt Russell. Like I think that all that stuff really, really works. Like, that relationship and seeing them kind of like, it's funny because I've been rewatching Parks and Rec because Steph has never seen it.
Oh, okay.
And so it is like, I'm almost 2 seconds in, like maybe a little bit more, but into like seeing their relationship, I was like, oh, this is an Ann and Andy thing. Like, yeah. it is that thing. And I like, I think all of that stuff is fun. And you get a sense of like who she is and like what her world is, and like I think all of that works. A little bit less so with Josh O'Connor, but I do think the personal stuff with him, it does work. Even though there's a lot of stuff there that we kind of just have to glean, like it's not really even told in a like expositional way. You just kind of have to like catch on to things, which most of the time is okay. Some of this, not so much, but
it's not
the other characters don't get a lot of like Coleman Domingo doesn't get anything. Colin Firth doesn't really get anything.
No, like, he's just a bad guy. And like, that's it. Like, he's bad guy that wife died and went septic. Like, that's literally, I mean, what it is.
He's kind of sort of evil Tommy Lee Jones from Men in Black.
Or the fugitive because he's chasing him.
Yeah. Yeah, he is basically those two characters. But the thing about like those two Tommy Lee Jones characters is you get where he's coming from. Like,
yeah.
And you never really get where Colin, like, he tries to explain himself, but it's like pissing in the ocean when he does. It's like, I can't hear your noise, man. Like, that's okay. Of course, this might be a bad idea, but that's anything. And like, that's not a good argument. Like, you're not, he's the military general in Iron Giant, right?
Yes.
Like, It's like, I need more than like, oh, this might be a fucking weapon from outer space. Like, you need to give me more than that, you know? Yeah. And the movie doesn't.
No, it doesn't. It's so wrapped up in its chase that it doesn't bother to stop. And when it does stop, it doesn't give you the course correction that you need for character to give you context. Like, so, like, you know, like, instead of like giving, like, it gives you moments, but it gives you the wrong moments. Like, like when Josh O'Connor and Alice, or what's her name, Eve Houston, who stop, and they stop in the nunnery. Yeah. Like, there are certain points where you could actually tell her what the fuck is going on.
Yep.
And you don't. You save it until, like, I don't know why. Like, you don't, like, there, like, the information dumps in this film are fucking wild. Like, I really wanted to like this movie, and it just kept on nagging me that there were, like, it's fucking Kep, man. It's that Kep screenplay, because there's nobody there to stop Spielberg from going, no, dude. Like, I know you're Spielberg, but this doesn't work. Like, the chase works. Like, let's take the chase and let's restructure everything. So, like it's very telling to me that Michael Caine did not edit this movie. It's the first movie in a long time that he hasn't been a part of editing. And I was like, I can feel that at every turn, because Michael Caine would not have let it been structured this way, because it's so weird, but it's also from the script level. Like, because you can't change the way that information is dispensed in this movie, because it's so location dependent. But like it's the, like, her freak out moment. Like, why does she have a freak out moment in the piano place? Like, the pianos, like, are so distracting. Like it would have been enough just in the fucking train. You didn't need the piano there to make it so disorienting for me. And I understand why you did that, but it's still no. If you're having a moment that is literally a spotlight moment that's showing you what's happening to her, why are you distracting away from it? Like, no, give her the moment. Let her have the moment. Let it be the spotlight. But it's like, it's those kinds of weird decisions that I'm like, what? But then you have like this car chase in the middle of the movie that's like, holy shit, this is some of the best, like,
action stuff. That train sequence is like, until you get to the piano, which I'm with you. Like, the piano thing, I get that's how they move pianos, but it just feels weird that they happen. Like, I don't know that we move that many pianos that, like, if you land in a car, it's probably going to be pianos.
Well, you know, when you're a billionaire, fucking Spielberg and Kep, like, you're a millionaire like Kep, you go, so what's going to be in a train? Well, you know what? Pianos would be the fucking thing.
Yeah, because they're huge.
Jesus Christ.
Until the pianos, like, that train sequence is, like,
that's
cooking, I was talking about, like, the effects work. Like,
yeah.
It's, I want to see the break. Like, we get those breakdowns of, like, here's how Tom Cruise did this in Mission Impossible. Fuck that. Show me how you did that train scene. Because I know it's a mixture of practical and digital, but I want to see that broken down, man. Because that is fucking tense, man.
Yeah. Like, anytime they are getting chased, it's fucking amazing. Like, the one where Josh O'Connor gets away when, like, he gets called by what's her name's character, and she says, don't go back, and he still goes back like a dummy, but then he sees it and goes, holy shit.
Him getting in the car and him not being the whole time I was like, are these agents this incompetent? But, like, to my point of, like, we've seen too much now. Yeah, they kind of are. But, like, also, I feel like they still would have just shot him.
But
like,
also,
how did they keep missing?
But also they do make, okay, like, so like they did make the point that he says, like, what's that, whatever his name is, I can't think of his name, I want to call him Buster Poindexter, but whatever, like, whatever fucking, like, whatever, Mr. Darcy, like, he does say that he wants him alive, like, he needs him alive for whatever reason. He needs him alive because I think it's because they're not a government agency. They're like a private company, and he doesn't want it spilling out because if it spills out, then things get really messy. I'm sorry. But that moment of Chase, that one long Spielbergian shot is so Spielberg that it's like, holy shit, this is great. Like, all of the chase stuff is amazing. All of this, like to your point from last year, like Josh O'Connor, man, I want him in everything because
he's like, fucking, he's good.
So like, fucking good.
The standoff at the beginning of the movie is, it's so like just his subtle things. And I realize like some of it is editing, some of it is direction and the film, the cinematography, like I get that, but like he's really good at just this like being in the moment for that character, and yeah, I hope that this is again, I said this at the end of last year, like I hope that this is the beginning of like a really great career for this guy, because like, we're talking about like actors that can kind of like fall into like, oh, he does this kind of thing. Like he could unfortunately wind up being like one of those guys, but I think he's absolutely brilliant. And he may, like, given more time, I think he would have really, really stolen the movie. But like, unfortunately, at some point, this kind of just becomes, and maybe rightfully so, based on like the script that they went with, like it becomes just Emily Blunt's movie.
Yeah,
and she's really good, but like the whole queen of, like, she's gonna save everybody thing, like savior thing at the end is a little like, there's some stuff that I just think didn't need to be there. The invisibility thing was kind of cool. But again, like, you know they're there. And I know you want them alive, but, like, they're going to get away. So I feel like the answer would be, like, well, just fire. Just shoot. Like, well, just keep shooting.
Well, also, like, the thing is like, again, like, I also think that, like, it also goes to, like, I kept on going back to this where I was like, you know what, Tony Gilroy would have had them, like, would have had mind control, and he would have had them be bulletproof. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it would have been a force field. Like, yeah. It's things that, like, Spielberg goes, well, no, I want the humans to be the best of them. And then, like, that's where Tony Gilroy could have the argument with him during the script phases of, like, Kepjes is going to go, oh, yeah, you know what? You're great, Stevie. You're great. You know what? Yeah. Because he's getting paid $5 million to fucking write the script, right? Whereas Gilroy would go, I mean, this is a man who argued with Kathy Kennedy through the entire process of making Andor a court, like a $500 million TV show, where he was like, no, I can have bad language because Star Wars, there is bad language there. Oh, no. Stormtroopers can, like, Imperial officers are going to try to rape somebody. No, like, he had the arguments with Kathy Kennedy, then shot her down because he's just a bulldozer. Like, that's why it feels like either that or this is a movie that should have been handed off to somebody like De Palma, and Spielberg produced it. Because De Palma would have had an ending where the government agents, like fire or shoot somebody, right?
So this is a weird, like, movie to compare it to, or to contrast it to, really.
Yeah.
But in How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes.
So his father is a, like, that kind of character, like Colin Firth in this movie, where it's like, I only see like, this is a bad thing. We have to kill them. We have to use them for what we can. We have to extract this information. Like, they are here to kill us. That's all they're like. And what Hiccup is an empathic character. Yes. He has a lot of empathy, not just for the creatures, but for the people around him. And he's trying to show his father that, and his father does not understand that. And it does not, there are points where his father gives up, but his father gives up on him, not on his mission. And Colin Firth's character, like, and the people around him seem to just give up on what they think their mission is. And in How to Train Your Dragon, the moment comes at a cost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Stoic only learns what his son is trying to teach him at the moment of cost. And it's not until that, like, it's hard to talk about without getting emotional, but there is a moment in that movie, both versions, where he goes into the water because he cannot save his son.
Yep.
And this thing that he has fought against, this creature that he has, like, spent his whole life trying to destroy, like, it and everything like it, he has to say, "I am sorry. I was wrong. Save my son." And there is nothing like that in this movie. It is just these characters giving up. And the problem with that is they don't learn anything. Those people do not learn anything. Like, showing them their dead wife or their son or their grandmother, it is not teaching them anything. There is not a cost to them for that. And unfortunately, like, it's not even just people with intents like that. Like, even in my own life, like, most of the lessons I've learned were because there was a cost when I was doing something misguided.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not in this fucking movie. And that's, like, that's a problem with the script and the direction. And you're trying to do E.T. And the thing about E.T., like, it's been a long time since I watched E.T., but, like, the government, like, they do kind of, like, I guess, give up in a sense. But that is a kid's movie. You can't just show them shooting the alien, even though that part is pretty traumatic. When they, you know, you think they killed E.T.
Yeah.
But, like, it is about these, like, kids saving this creature, and so they're doing, like, all of these heroic kind of things, and, like, this isn't that, but you're trying to kind of make it that, and you're not gonna get me with that, you know. And I hate to sound so shitty about the movie, because I did really enjoy it. Like, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. It's just not as meaningful as you want it to be.
Well,
David and Steven.
Well, and also, it's like, okay, so, like, talking about a movie this year that expounded positivity, but did it in a realistic manner. Like, and going back to how, like, your comp of How to Train Your Dragon is perfect, because it does talk about empathy, and, like, like Project Hail Mary is about a character gaining empathy and gaining strength to do something that they didn't want to do or never wanted to do in the first place, but also, like, very clever narrative storytelling, because the thing that we are not told is the biggest thing that's withheld from us, because it adds context to somebody's story, but we have to prepare ourselves for that. Like, the reveal at the end that these two were related to one another and connected had no narrative oomph to it like Project Hail Mary did. Like, do you know right. what I mean? Like, yeah. And so it robs it of, like, there's no power. Like, what's supposed to be a powerful moment is not a powerful moment, right? And it, that's the kind of thing for me, like, and again, you put more of the empathetic, like the nail into the coffin, so to speak, in regards to empathy with How to Train Your Dragon. But it's like these two movies, like How to Train Your Dragon and either one of them, the live action or the animated one, and Project Hail Mary, are about gaining strength through empathy and understanding that.
Empathy as a superpower and not as like this detrimental thing.
Yes.
But like the thing about Project Hail Mary is like, if you, like if that movie's A, not just mostly solo, you know, like him in space, like if he's on a ship with other characters that aren't there for the good cause, like they're there for, like, if it was, you know, about like, oh, aliens and we're going to investigate, and you have characters that are like, oh, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, like you cannot get to the point where they reverse their decision or understand the error of their ways without some kind of cause, some kind of cost, some kind, like that movie works because it's just him and it's this one guy choosing to act on empathy and faith rather than like fear.
Yes.
And like it, and if all the characters are acting that way because they collectively come to that realization, that's also a different thing. But what you have is like these very, like I hesitate to call them evil, but like these specific kinds of characters who would tell you that empathy is a weakness, like suddenly just going like, I don't know, let them do what they want, I give up. And it's like, that might be a little realistic, but it's not, it, to me, that's not a, just not a good story.
No, no. And that's where everything falls apart, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, you need that. Like, you ultimately, to pull off the trick that he's trying to pull off, you need that. But also, I feel like there's a version of this that can be done. It's just, it's not, it's, again, like, I feel like it's within the writing, like, and it just doesn't work. Like this ultimately for me, the chase part of it, the action adventure, man, does that work? That is cooking.
If it weren't, if part of the like bigger part of the story of this movie were not like these two beings who like have spectacular like abilities.
Yeah.
And this whole like we're gonna pull humanity together, and if you weren't trying to do this like grand hopeful like thing, then and the movie were just about like they have knowledge and they're trying to unleash it, you know, onto the world, and the government is trying to stop it. Like all of that stuff would really work. It does kind of like fall apart when you're like, well, let's also imbue it with this like really hopeful, like humanity needs to come together. Like we are all one people. Empathy is a superpower thing. And like, you could have done that on a smaller scale and the movie would still, like it would work. Like you wouldn't have to do this big grand gesture thing that you do. Yeah. Like it, and you could still just end it with them. Like you don't even have to do like the whole world is watching. Like you can do a little bit of that and then just do that. Like, I think that very last little bit at the end, like I like that. I like that it's kind of open ended, and it just ends with a listen. Like that's such a unfortunately unique concept now of like shut up and just listen. Like just listen to people. Like don't talk. Don't just listen to what they're saying, and start there. That's kind of where empathy begins, and I do like that. It's just that a lot of that other, you just get lost in the sauce of it all and it starts to fall apart if you think about it. But I mean, all in all, it's still a really, really good movie. It's a lot of fun. It's full of like just acting juggernauts right now. And I don't know. I hope it does well enough. You know, that I mean, it's a Spielberg movie. It doesn't matter. Spielberg will always just do whatever he wants to do, except make Robo-Apocalypse, because that's never happening.
No, that's like, but also like, I don't want like, okay, so like, let's be honest. I don't want him to make it. I'd rather have, you know who I want to make that movie? If it like, you know, so I mean, we know
Cameron could make it.
No, you know who can make it? And who would make a badass version of it? Because the script is by what's his name? By Drew. It is Lord and Miller.
Oh God, yeah. Lord and Miller animated. That would be fun.
And could you imagine Amber Midthundergard being?
That would be incredible.
Because at this point, you have like, if you're worried about bankable, like charismatic, like you know, indigenous people being stars, you literally have like seven of them from Reservation Dogs just waiting, and then of course much more. Like the sheriff could be played by the guy that's in there that plays the sheriff. He's also in Dr. Sleep. He plays the right hand. Like you, like there's so many like great indigenous actors right now that you could do that. But also, like, there's, like, so many great actors that could take this on, especially with Lord and Miller being a part of that. And I could just, I can already see their version of it, because their version of it is completely puppets. Is complete yeah. puppets. Like, literally would cost probably $500 million, but it would be, like, all animatronics, all puppets, all badass. And I mean, like after Project Hail Mary, I feel like there's not much they can't do, even though they're going back. Like, it's kind of weird to me that they're going back to Jump Street, but also
that's kind of fun. I love the
25th. Because yeah. they skipped the fourth one.
You were right. 24 is 21, 22. They skipped 23
and then go into 24.
Yeah, you were right. So it's 24 Jump Street, and we had to make it 24 because it's been so long.
But also, I am praying to God they pay whatever money to Cate Blanchett to get her to star as the bad guy, so they can do
great.
Because remember, like I think it's 27 Jump Street is like in the credit sequence is Cate Blanchett because of Carte Blanche. I'm excited, and also you know what? It makes sense to me that they're doing it because they've spent so much time in PG-13 land that they need to go back to our land to kind of do a refresh. And plus, you know, it's kind of greedy of me, but I need Channing Tatum to be Charming Potato. I need him to be Jeff again. I need him to be that, like I need the world to remember why Channing Tatum is who he is beyond Gambit. Because we know we're not getting his Gambit as Deadpool, like the Deadpool Gambit.
It's going to be a little more like serious kind of take on it.
But anyways, Spielberg, go see it. Make it, judge it for yourself, because like I have never seen so many people give a movie either 1 star or 4 stars, never anything in between.
It is a little like cinematically, like critically divisive. It is kind of interesting to see. Well, I do kind of just fall in the middle. Like it's mid Spielberg.
It's a basically a mid Spielberg.
So next week, I know, or at least I know what I'm going to see. Adam may or may not go see it, but I'm going to see Toy Story 5. Super excited about it. But I'm also going to get a chance to go see The Death of Robin Hood before we record. So.
Okay. Well, we can talk about like maybe we're delaying it so that we can actually both see both of them. Because I'm actually like, I love, the director of, Death of Robin Hood. Cause he did one of my favorite movies of the last 10, 5 years, which is Pig.
The Nicolas Cage movie.
I'm going to try to watch that this week.
Heartbreaking. Yeah. Heartbreaking. And then he also did Quiet Place Day Zero, which is a great...
I still haven't seen that either.
Oh, man, that's so good.
Yeah, Stephanie was telling me about how good. She was like, you liked the first two, and you didn't... I was like, yeah, I just didn't see it. She was like, it's really good. So
yeah, unexpectedly so. And I mean, you know, it's a great time because I think early next year we're getting Quiet Place 3. Yeah. Krasinski licking his wounds.
I'm really, really interested to see Hugh Jackman play like what looks like might be a truly unlikable character.
Yeah.
Like, because this is not the trailers kind of tell you, but this is very much not like the Robin Hood that you know. It's a lot of it's based on like the Robin Hood stuff that doesn't get heavily publicized, like these like poems and stories of like a darker character.
Yep.
And so like that's where they're going with it. And I'm trying to think, have we seen Hugh Jackman play like a truly like, I don't like that?
Not really. I don't think so. Like, I'm trying to think of something and I don't think that we ever have. P.T. Barnum
that's the one I would bring up, is him playing P.T. Barnum. Like, even in that movie, that character is not great.
No, he's not.
But he still played with a sense of like kind of like charisma. Like Song Sung Blue, like he kind of has his moments, but like overall, like he's still a very likable guy, you know? It's going to be pretty interesting to see him do something where he is just not a good guy. You know, even if, you know, he kind of is a good guy, just not a good character. So, not good character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I know, anyway. I know.
So hopefully we'll be talking about both of those. For sure, though, we're talking about, or at least I will be talking about Toy Story 5. So
no, I mean, like at the end of the day, I do want to go, like that's what I said, like I do want to go see it. It's just, I don't, like, I'm like, it's like an Indiana Jones film. Like I said, going back to Indiana Jones, like to me, it's all fan fiction because Indiana Jones went off into the sunset. Like it's a purely cinematic thing, right? Because like he went off into the sunset with his dad and lived happily ever after.
So you could just say this is a different Woody and Buzz.
Yes.
And it's just all new adventures. So okay,
it's the Woody and they're not my Woody and Buzz, but they're somebody's. I mean, they're Taylor Swift's Woody and Buzz, right? Like I don't care. Like why couldn't you just continue to plan your fucking wedding at the Madison Square Garden with Travis Bickle or whatever the hell his name is? Like I'm done with you. I'm done with you. I mean, look, like not to make it political, but I got one good thing out of this week, which is Spencer Pratt suck my dick. You didn't fucking become mayor of. You're not.
Yeah,
going to become,
I was going to ask you about that. Like, so the Spencer Pratt like didn't win.
No,
so, a lot of election fraud going on in California there, huh? Because Spencer Pratt didn't win.
Yeah, of course, because that's exactly what it is. Because the guy who spent $10 million on crystals because of a fucking sex cult, and that wants to like put unhoused people in concentration camps, didn't win in the progressive state. Oh Jesus Christ! Like, yeah, come at us, people from Texas. You hate us so much, but you know what? I don't think you really hate us. Yeah, I think you love us because you love our money. Like, it's going to be funny in 2027 when we stop sending our tax money to the rest of the world, and y'all poor asses can't pay for anything.
much.
Like, I love listening to which, and we'll go, but yeah. You, people have already turned it off. But when I talk to truck drivers and they like, yeah. It's always just, you know, California and New York that decide blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, hey man, I don't know if you've looked at a map by like, I know you look at a map by like the color that they put on the map. Like this is red and this is blue. Like how can blue be? I'm like, yeah, but look at the count, look at the people, look yes. at the population of New York City and Los Angeles versus like 90% of every other city in this country.
Exactly. Well, and also like California, like I don't think that people realize California holds 17% of the nation's population. Let that sink in. 17, almost 20%, almost a fifth of the nation resides in California. Okay? Like, you know, small brains, let that sink in. Whereas even in Texas, that's not even close to 10%. So like, you know, like I don't get it. Like, you know, like Florida thinks that they're the center of the world and you know what? Let them. God bless them. God bless them. Let them.
I'll be glad when Florida, things no longer. Yeah. Like, please. Like if anything could fall into the ocean, Florida like, please Jesus Christ. Go.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
Anyway, we'll be back next week. Until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com or read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieall.com, where, as we speak, my review of the John Candy classic, The Great Outdoors, just posted in 4K. I fucking love that movie. Dude.
The phrase, go find yourself a spin cycle, lives in my head, rent free. Like, I haven't yep. seen that movie in 20 years.
Made all the better by the fact that Academy Award winning actress Annette Bening says it.
Yeah.
In her first role. In her go first
find
role.
Find yourself a spin cycle. that's a great movie, man.
Yes.
All right, so yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week. Number 1 Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. Say hello together if you're with me now.